Nayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 31, Chapter entitled The Gopis' Songs at Separation, text number 7 on the board. Okay, or 6 and 7. Text number 6. O you who destroy the suffering of Braja's people, O hero of all women, your smile shatters the false pride of your devotees. Please, dear friend, accept us as your maid servants and show us your beautiful face. Text number 7. Pranata,
pranata,
dehinam,
dehinam,
papa,
papa,
karshanam,
karshanam,
trina,
trina,
charanugam,
charanugam,
shriniketanam,
shriniketanam,
pani,
pani,
panarpitam,
panarpitam,
te, padambujam,
padambujam,
krinu,
krinu,
Kucheshu
Naha
Krindi Kritchayam Pranata Dehi Nam Papa Karshanam Trinacharanugam Sri Niketanam Pani panarpitam te padam bujam.
Pani panarpitam te padam
bujam. Krinuku cheshu na krindi hrichchayam.
Krinuku cheshu na krindi hrichchayam.
Pranata.
Pranata.
Who are surrendered to you.
Who are surrendered to you.
Dehinam.
Dehinam.
Of the embodied living beings.
Papa,
the sins.
Yeah.
Karshanam, which remove. Trina, grass. Chara, who graze. The cows. Anugam,
following.
Shri, of the goddess of fortune. Niketanam, the abode. Pani, of the serpent. Kaliya. Pana, on the hoods. Apitam, placed. Te,
your.
Pada Ambujam,
lotus feet.
Krinu, please put.
Kucheshu,
on the breasts.
Naha,
ow. Krindi, cut away. Hritshayam, the lust in our hearts. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Your lotus feet destroy the past sins of all embodied souls who surrender to them. Those feet follow after the cows in the pastures and are the eternal abode of the goddess of fortune. Since you once put those feet on the hoods of the great serpent Kaliya, please place them upon our breasts and tear away the lust in our hearts. Translation responsibly. Your lotus feet destroy the past sins of all embodied souls who surrender to them. Those feet follow after the cows in the pastures and are the eternal abode of the goddess of fortune. Since you once put those feet the hoods of the great serpent, Kaliya. Please place them upon our breasts. And tear away the lust in our hearts. Purport. In their appeal, the gopis point out the Lord Krishna's lotus feet destroy the sins of all surrendered conditioned souls. The Lord is so merciful that he even goes out to herd the cows in the pasturing ground, and thus his lotus feet follow them about in the grass. He has offered his lotus feet to the goddess of fortune and has placed them upon the hoods of the serpent Kaliya. Therefore, considering all of this, the Lord should place his lotus feet on the gopis' breasts and satisfy their desire. That is the logic the gopis employ here. Om Gyan Timanandasya Gilanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Pancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Bebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Sanatan Goswami wrote the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not write anything himself. Nothing is accredited to him except the Shikshastika, which is 8 verses. This is common in different religions in the world. Christ did not leave anything himself in terms of writing. There's nothing directly attributed to Christ. I think also, I'm not expert, but I think Muhammad and Buddha, there are similar things in their traditions also. That the great teacher or the founder of the entire religion or movement is not accredited to having written so much himself. But it is the teachings of that person that the entire movement is based upon. So Gaudiya Vaishnavism is based upon the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Now in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned in the Adi Lila in the beginning when describing the different branches or the different limbs of the Chaitanya tree, the different devotees of Mahaprabhu. When Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, he describes those two personalities as being the generals in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, Sankirtan movement, because Mahaprabhu gave them very special service to do. And they are so prominent within our tradition that Rupa Goswami, all the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are called Gaudiya Vaishnavas, indicating they're Mahaprabhu's followers, but also we are known as Rupanugas, which means we're also specifically and especially designated as followers of Rupa Goswami in our tradition. And Sanatan Goswami is Rupa Goswami's eldest brother, but he's also his spiritual master. We see in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami dedicates part of his dedication is to Sanatan Goswami, who is his spiritual master. So Sanatan said, Rupa is the leader of the 6 Goswamis, but Sanatan has a very special position in the sense that he's Rupa's guru, and he's the most senior of the Goswamis. Now he wrote one book called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the book which all of the Goswami's literatures are based upon. So if you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see that Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatan Goswami for 30 days in Benares when he was staying at the house of, I think, Tapan Mishra. So he was instructing him for 30 days. And after 30 days of Lord Chaitanya just speaking to him continuously for 30 days, you can imagine How ecstatic it must have been, the conversation. Imagine having the opportunity to sit down for 30 days and have Lord Chaitanya just speak. So after 30 days of Lord Chaitanya's shiksha, he said to Sanat, now you write all of this down. You write it so that it will be recorded in history. And that's what we have now. The teachings of, if you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the summary of those teachings that Sanat Goswami had given. And he wrote many books. And Rupa Goswami was spoken to by Lord Chaitanya for 10 days continuously at Allahabad on the Dasrameda Ghat, the Trivani, at the confluence of the three sacred rivers. And Lord Chaitanya said the same thing to him. Now you write everything down. So Rupa and Sanatan performed the special service of writing down everything which Lord Chaitanya taught. And everything we do in our lives as devotees is based on what Lord Chaitanya taught to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami, probably his principal work, or one of his principal works, is called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Now in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is actually a commentary or a summary of the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's not as long as the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is 335 chapters, 12 cantos, 18,000 verses. Right? It's a very voluminous work for us in Kali Yuga. Right? But the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is not as long as the Bhagavatam. It's like a commentary or a synopsis of the entire philosophy of the Bhagavatam. And it's divided into two parts. The first part is the story of Narad Muni travelling throughout the universe looking for the greatest devotee of Krishna. And the second part is the cowherd boy Gokul Kumar also travelling throughout the creation trying to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, to his swarup, to his original position with Krishna. So in doing this, Sanatan Goswami is actually commenting on the entire Bhagavatam, and he's delineating or describing the different levels of devotion that different devotees have in different places in the Lord's creation. So as he travels through, let's say as Narad Muni travels through the creation, he goes to Lord Indra and he says, are you the greatest devotee? And Lord Indra said, no, it is not me, it is Lord Brahma. So he goes to Lord Brahma and he says, are you the greatest devotee? He said, no, it is Lord Shiva. So he goes to Lord Shiva, he says, are you the greatest devotee? He says, no, it is Prahlad Maharaj. So he goes to Prahlad Maharaj, he says, are you the greatest devotee? He says, no, it is the Pandavas. So he goes to the Pandavas. No, I think he goes to Hanuman. And then he says to Hanuman, are you the greatest devotee? He says, no, the Pandavas. So he goes to the Pandavas. He said, are you the best? He said, no, you have to go to the Yadus in Dwarka. So he goes to Dwarka and he says to the Yadus, are you the best? And they said, the best amongst us is Uddhava. So then he goes to Uddhava and he said, are you the best? And Uddhava said, I thought I was. Not in a proud way. Not in a proud way. Like, yeah, I was the best. You found him. You know, congratulations. Here I am. I'm the best. I'm the greatest devotee. You know, here. It wasn't like that. His mood was, I am. He said, I cannot imagine anyone having more love for Krishna than I do. In that sense, he felt he was the greatest devotee of Krishna, or he could not imagine that someone had more love than him. He said, but then Krishna sent me to Vrindavan. And then I realized I didn't have any love for Krishna anymore. Because when I got to Vrindavan, I discovered when I got there, I saw the Brijbasis, and they had been separated from Krishna for many years, in one sense. Because Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, and then he went to Dwarka, and he didn't come back. In one sense, in another sense he does come back, but in some senses he doesn't come back. So Uddhava saw Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. He went into the palace of Nanda Maharaj at Nandagram, and he saw that Mother Yashoda had not cooked since Krishna left years and years before, and the oven, Mother Yashoda's oven, was just covered in cobwebs. She hadn't cooked for years and years and years. That means no one had eaten for years and years and years. And because they're constantly been crying, the residents of Vrindavan, feeling separation from Krishna, when there is water on the face, you cannot sleep. That's why sometimes when we wake devotees up, we spray water on their face, or, you know, splash them with some water. Because that will immediately, if there's water on the face, you cannot sleep. So, because all the residents in Vrindavan had tears in their eyes, right, and they were crying continuously since Krishna had left Vrindavan, then no one had slept or eaten for years, like for years, for decades practically, since Krishna had left Vrindavan. So when Uddhava saw all this, he was just amazed. And then he went and he saw the gopis. And he saw that the gopis, they were in complete madness at a place called Uddhava Kiari, which is very close to Nandagram in Vrindavan. When I first went there in 1991, I think it was, Tamal Krishnamaraj took us there. It was quite nice there. There was trees there. It was quite like a little forest. But now you go there, the government cut down all the trees there. They just went through and cut it all down. And they've destroyed the peacefulness of the place to some degree. So now it's just like an open field. But still the holy place is there. So at that place, the gopis were just feeling separation from Krishna. And as we read in these chapters of the Bhagavatam, they were just immersed in madness and just feeling separation from Krishna. So this is the summit of devotion. Amongst even the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis are the highest. They have the most intense love for Krishna, and Uddhava personally witnessed that. And of all the gopis, Srimati Radharani has the most intense love for Krishna, and Uddhava witnessed that. Her madness is just, you know, her love for Krishna is just unparalleled within creation. She is the topmost Paramahamsa Vaishnava. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Brihad Bhagavatam reader, which is commenting on the Bhagavatam, points out that the gopis are the most exalted devotees. And Lord Chaitanya taught this to Rupa and Sanatan. He said, of all the devotees in creation, the gopis are the greatest. Vrindavan is the topmost abode. Love for Krishna is the goal of life. Srimad Bhagavatam is the perfect scripture. The gopis' love is the greatest out of all the devotees within creation. Their devotion is the topmost. So here we are seeing in these particular five chapters, chapters 29 to 33 of the Bhagavatam, we are seeing the gopis' love for Krishna being displayed. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu absorbed himself while he was in Jagannath Puri especially. He absorbed himself in this mood of the gopis being separated from Krishna. And we see in his pastimes. In Mayapur, the first 24 years of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, his Sankirtan movement, he was engaged in relishing, especially in the nocturnal kirtans, especially in the final years of the pastimes in Mayapur, after he'd given up the Leela of being Nimai Pandit and he began the Sankirtan movement, then he would have the nocturnal kirtans in the house of Srivas Thakur at Srivas Angam, and he would experience great ecstasy in those kirtans in association with his devotees. And it is actually described that the pastimes of Mahaprabhu and his devotees in Srivas Angam in Mayapur are the same as the Rasa Leela between Krishna and the gopis in Vrindavan. Same mood is being experienced. Lord Chaitanya is experiencing that same mood of taking on the mood of being Srimati Radharani and dancing with Krishna, with all the devotees, and chanting Krishna's holy name, same as in the Rasa Leela. So it is Lord Chaitanya's greatest ecstasy to perform that particular pastime out of all the pastimes in Mayapur. But then he feels that there's even more that he wants to experience. Even though he's experiencing the topmost ecstasy in Mayapur in the nocturnal kirtans in Srivasangam, but he wants to experience even more. So then he takes sannyas and he goes to Jagannath Puri and then he experiences in Jagannath Puri great ecstasy, feeling lamentation or vipralamba or separation from Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya's daily pastimes in Jagannath Puri are amazing. Right? And they are like the emblem of pure devotional service for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. When the devotees from Mayapur, every year when Lord Chaitanya was staying in Puri, the devotees from Mayapur would travel, they'd walk for 1 month from Mayapur to Puri to stay with Lord Chaitanya, all his eternal associates. These days we just get on the train. You know, we drive down to Calcutta from Mayapur, takes 3 hours to the train, 4 hours to the train. We get on the train, takes 8 hours overnight, is it? 9, 10, 12 hours, 8, 9, 10, 12 hours, like that. overnight, you sleep overnight, and then you wake up, you're in Puri. Right? So quite simple these days. But in the days of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the devotees had to walk from Mayapur to Puri. It took 1 month. And then they had to walk back. That took 1 month as well. This is the kind of devotion they had. So attached to Lord Chaitanya, they would perform the austerity of walking for a month just to be with him. And then they would stay with him for 4 months during the rainy season. And then they would head back and spend 6 months in Mayapur, and then they'd come back again. How much devotion. And they did this for 18 years, this particular pastime, like that. Like that for 12 years or so. They did that particular pastime of going to associate with Lord Chaitanya and Puri. So this is how much devotion they had to with Lord Chaitanya. So when they weren't there, when they weren't in Jagannath Puri, Mahaprabhu, he would get up for Mangalati, and he would go and see Lord Jagannath in the temple at Mangalati time. And he wouldn't actually enter into the temple, into the actual Kirtan Mandap, or the actual, like, this is the temple room, that's the deity room. So that in Jagannath Puri there's a huge temple room in front of the deity room. He wouldn't actually enter into the temple room, but he would stay right at the back where the Garuda Stamba is, or the column of Garuda. Just like in Mayapur, outside of our temple in Mayapur, we have the Garuda Stamba outside of the temple. Garuda guards the entrance of the temple. So he would stand behind the Garuda Stamba and he would just look at Lord Jagannath. And he would feel he was with Krishna. He was seeing Krishna in Vrindavan, Shama Sundara, standing there with his threefold bending form. And he would just meditate on Krishna. And it is said he would stay there from Mangalati until Rajbhoga. Right? Doing kirtan, or just reciting verses, or just looking at the Lord. Can you imagine coming and just looking at Radha Vallabha from Mangalati until Rajbhoga? From 4:30 in the morning till like 11:30 in the morning. That's devotion. That's pure devotional service. So satisfied, just standing and just gazing at the lotus face of Krishna and feeling completely satisfied of being in Krishna's association. Then Lord Chaitanya would head back towards the Gambira, to where he was staying at Kashi Mishra's house. And he would go around to the Siddhabakul, to just behind the Gambira. He gave a place, Siddhabakul, he gave one place for Haridas Thakur to stay. Haridas Thakur was staying there, and in order to protect Haridas Thakur from the sun, one time Lord Chaitanya took a toothpick, which was offered to Lord Jagannath. The pujaris in Jagannath Mandir, they offer toothpicks to Lord Jagannath after he takes prasad. Not that he has any problems, you know, it's not like he needs one, but they offer it to him. And then he took one of those toothpicks and he put it in the ground, and in front of everyone's eyes, a bakula tree grew, just immediately manifested, a beautiful bakula tree. So that would protect Haridas Thakur from the hot sun. And Lord, and Haridas Thakur would chant 3 lakhs, 192 rounds every day, just sitting there chanting practically all day, just absorbed in chanting. 64 rounds he would chant out loud, 64 rounds he would chant softly, and 64 rounds he'd chant in his mind silently, showing that there are different levels of japa, or different types of japa or absorption in the holy name. And Lord Chaitanya would go and he would meet with Haridas Thakur every day. And he would arrange for Govinda and the other devotees of his personal servants to bring Haridas Thakur Maha Prasadam every day from Lord Jagannath. He said, you just sit here and chant, right, peacefully all day, and we will organise your prasadam. You don't have to be in any anxiety. So he would go there, and when Rupa and Sanatan were in Jagannath Puri, they would also stay at the Siddhabakul with Haridas Thakur. So Lord Chaitanya would come and he would sit for a while with Haridas Thakur and with Sanatan and Rupa, and he would discuss Krishna Gita very mildly and very pleasantly. He would just sit there in a very happy mood, and they would sit below him, and he would just speak to them very sweetly. Then he would go and take his bath in the ocean at Jagannath Puri. He would go and take snan in the sea. Whenever the devotees arrived, after walking for 1 month from Mayapur to Puri, when they arrived in Puri, they would go straight past Lord Jagannath's temple and go straight to the Gambira to see Lord Chaitanya. Right? And they wouldn't even worry sometimes about shaving or taking bath or anything. They'd just walk straight and go and see Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya would greet them all, and he'd be very ecstatic to see all of his devotees after 6 months. And then he would, after spending some time with them, he would say, everyone go and take bath in the ocean. Right? So this is a wonderful pastime that we perform when we go to Jagannath Puri. When we were there last year, we spent about 1 hour a day in the ocean. And it's purifying just to bathe in the ocean, because you remember, in that ocean, Lord Chaitanya would bathe personally every day. So that ocean has become a holy pilgrimage site. It's purified. And you feel that if you're in the right consciousness when you're in there, and you're bathing, and you're remembering the fact that Mahaprabhu, it's a very purifying experience. What to speak of just being very pleasant, like that. So after bathing in the ocean, then Lord Chaitanya would come and he would take prasad. And then in the afternoon he would go back to the Gambira and he would lie down. And sometimes he would take a nap. And Govinda would massage his legs. One time when Govinda was massaging his legs in the Gambira, Lord Chaitanya had fallen asleep. And Govinda was massaging his legs, like his right leg. And then he had to massage the left leg of Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya was 7 foot tall. So he was very long and he took up the whole room. The Gambira, the room, is very small. So the only way that he could massage the other side of the Lord's body was to step over the Lord's body, which we would never imagine doing. Stepping over the Shalagram Shila, or stepping over a Govardhan Shila, or stepping over the deity, we'd never imagine doing that. But he thought, let me go to hell, right? Even if I go to hell for committing this offence, still I will do it, because I need to complete my service to the Lord. So he placed a gamsha over the Lord, and he stepped over the Lord's body, and then he massaged the other side of his body. Then after some time, Lord Chaitanya came back to external consciousness, and he saw that Govinda was still sitting there inside the room. And he said, Govinda, how come you have not gone to take your prasadam? Why didn't you go and take lunch? And Govinda said that, I'm willing to commit thousands of offences in your service to please you, but for my own sense gratification, I won't commit one offence. Like that. So he wouldn't step back over the Lord to go out of the room and take his prasadam. So then, performing these pastimes, Lord Chaitanya would stay in the Gambira, and then late in the afternoon, he would go back down to the temple to see Lord Jagannath again and spend more time with Lord Jagannath. Then he would come back to the Gambira, and he would stay in the Gambira all night, and he would not sleep the whole night. He would just stay there. And while he was in the Gambira, he was with Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy. These two associates were allowed to stay with the Lord in the Gambira. And while they were in the Gambira in Lord Chaitanya's room, they would stay up all night and they would recite different verses to increase Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy, to make Lord Chaitanya more and more ecstatic, like that. Because Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar are Lalita and Vishakha. So Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Radharani, and they were performing the service of assisting Radharani in remembering Krishna and trying to pacify her in her separation from Krishna. So they would recite different verses, and some of the verses they recited are actually directly from this chapter, this section of the Bhagavatam. So Lord Chaitanya himself, in his highest ecstasy, in his highest mood of devotion in Vipralamba Seva, he relished these particular verses of the Bhagavatam which we're studying now. Right, so this is a very elevated, very ecstatic part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when you read the commentaries of the Acharyas, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's actually an amazing description what takes place. Because we have to understand that out of all the places in Krishna's creation, right, we have in the Brahma Samhita, it just says there is Devidam. Devidam means the world of Durga, this place, the material world where where we are now. And then above Devidam is Maheshdam. That's the abode of Lord Shiva. That is said to be in the coverings of the universe, where the universe in between, like the causal ocean and the universes themselves, the coverings, it is said that Lord Shiva resides in that place. Right? I've heard Bhakti Charuswami say that the false ego portion of that, which is 10 times larger than all the other coverings, that's where Shiva resides, which would make sense in the sense that he is the lord of false ego. So it is described that he resides somewhere in that place, that is Maheshtham, like that, the abode of Shiva. And then above that is Haridham. Haridham means Vaikuntha. And above that is Golokadham. Golokadham means? Goloka Vrindavan. And Goloka Vrindavan is made up of three portions also. Right? Dwarka is on the outer portion of the Goloka planet. And then in the middle of the, like the inner portion, going further in towards the center of the Goloka planet, is Mathura. And in the center of the Goloka planet, that is Vrindavan. Right? So sometimes we think that the most opulent place must be Vaikuntha. But more opulent than Vaikuntha is Dwarka. Right? Because that is Krishna's own abode. 16,000 palaces and so forth in Dwarka. It is the most opulent place. And sometimes we think that Vrindavan, because it's like a rural place, we think that it's very simple there. And it is simple because it's a forest rather than like a city. So it is more simple. But actually it is described that the opulence in Vrindavan surpasses even that of Dwarka and Vaikuntha. It is more opulent there. But the point is that the devotees there, because they're just in the very natural mood of serving Krishna spontaneously, in the raga, in the mood of rag, just a very spontaneous, natural, loving mood towards Krishna, they don't get so preoccupied with the opulence. But actually it's the most opulent place, it's the most beautiful. The palace of Nanda Maharaj even surpasses the palaces in Dwarka. It's the most opulent place, but people are not, the devotees in Vrindavan are not so preoccupied with the opulence. They're more interested in the madhurya, or the sweetness of their relationship with Krishna. Like that. So, the same can be applied to understanding the devotees in Vrindavan. The devotees in Vrindavan, even though they may appear to be simple because they're cowherd people, actually they're the most exalted personalities in the universe. Right? And the gopis here, if we read the verses of the gopis in this chapter when they're singing songs in separation from Krishna, they're speaking in pure Sanskrit. Anyone knows, you know, if you've been a devotee for a little while, to speak pure Sanskrit is very difficult. Is anyone here who can speak pure Sanskrit? Right? What to speak is speaking pure Sanskrit, speaking it not just purely, but speaking it perfectly and poetically. Right? I mean, these beautiful verses. You know, it's so poetic, and so the meter is perfect, and the grammar is perfect, and the rhyme is perfect. I mean, everything is just perfect within these verses of the gopis. So their intelligence is higher than anyone else in creation. They're even more intelligent than Lord Brahma. Even though they appear to be like simple cowherd girls, they're actually the most intelligent persons in creation. Lord Brahma, in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Bhishma is passing away from this world, who was one of the 12 Mahajans, he cries to those now, recognizing their exalted position. Right? So they are the most personalities in the universe. Even though they act very simply like they're just cowherd girls, they're actually the most exalted personalities. So here, they're composing their verses in glorification of Krishna. And when you read the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the other acharyas, it's amazing what is taking place in the conversation that they're in these verses they're describing towards Krishna. Actually, the acharyas describe that in these verses, in this particular chapter, it appears that they're separated from Krishna at this point in time, right? But actually the acharyas describe that Krishna is actually standing right next to them in a bush, right? The gopis are sitting there on the bank of the Jamuna and they're all chanting verses in separation from Krishna in the meditation. And the bush is just on the other side of the bush. He's actually right with them, but they don't realize it. And they're speaking to Krishna and Krishna is speaking back to them, but they think it's just in their madness. They're hearing Krishna, but he's actually speaking to them. So there's actually a conversation taking place in all these verses. So in between the lines of the verses, Krishna says something. They say a line, or in one of the verses, they'll say something, and then Krishna will say something back to them. So there's a whole conversation taking place here between Krishna and the gopis, which the acharyas point out. And this is what Lord Chaitanya is relishing. When Lord Chaitanya is in the Gambhira, he's relishing the deep mellows, the rasa, between the gopis and Krishna in this particular pastime. So here in this particular verse, the gopis say, "Your lotus feet destroy the sins, all the souls extended to them." The gopis are saying to Krishna, please put your feet on my breasts, on our breasts. And Krishna says to them from behind the bush, he says, that is sinful. I cannot do that. That is sinful. Like that. But they say, no, your lotus feet destroy the sins of all the embodied souls who surrender unto them. So don't try to trick us. Don't try to tell us it's sinful to put your feet on our breasts, because your feet are the abode of purity. So there's no sin. So don't try to trick us like this. Then they say, then Krishna says, but my feet are too hard. No, sorry. He says, but your breasts are too hard. Right? So therefore my feet are soft. Your breasts are too hard. And then they say to Krishna, but those feet are too hard. And it's much harder on the ground out in the pastures than it would breast. So don't tell us that either. Right? Don't try to trick us. Right? You can try to trick us, but we know. You know, you're just trying to make excuses like this. So then, Krishna says it is not appropriate, because on your breast you keep ornaments. What are they called? Mangala Sutra. You see, when you go to India, the Mataji's wear like gold on their chests, like beautiful sutras, beautiful jewelry. So he said, it is not appropriate for my feet to be on your chest. You should have beautiful ornaments on your chest. And they say, do not try to trick us like this. Because the goddess of fortune, right, she is massaging your feet eternally. Lakshmi, who is more opulent? She is on your feet. So what is the problem with feet on the breast? Can you put on the breast? Right? Your feet are the highest abode of opulence. There's nothing which would be a greater ornament for us than to have your feet touching us. Like that. And then Krishna says to them, he says, but I'm scared of your husbands. This is like Krishna's playing with the gopis. He says, but I'm scared of your husbands. As if Krishna cares anything about their husbands. Right? Krishna doesn't care anything about their husbands. He's not scared of anyone for a start, but he's particularly not scared of their husbands. But he says to them, to joke with them, he's like having fun with them. He says to them, but I'm scared of your husbands, so I can't do it. Like that. And they say, don't be ridiculous. You remember the words of the serpent Kaliya. You're not scared of a thousand-hooded serpent. So why are you scared of our husbands? What is your, he's just playing with them, right? So they say, please put your feet on our breasts and tear away the lust in our hearts. Right? So this is the mood of the gopis, and this is what Lord Chaitanya is relishing when he's in the Gambhira. He's relishing these rasa between Krishna and the gopis. Right? Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, do not, as is the theme that Prabhupada points out in the Krishna book in this whole section of the Bhagavatam, do not think that this is lust. Right? It has nothing to do with material lust. Because gopis are asking Krishna to put his feet on their breasts, their sense gratification. Right? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points this out. This is not the mood of the gopis. It is not that it is sense gratification. It's not that they are lusty and they want their lust fulfilled. Right? It has nothing to do with that. It is that they see that Krishna is attracted to them. Right? Krishna is attracted to the gopis, naturally. Because he is the original male. He is the Maha Purush. He is the Adi Purush. He is the original male. And they are the perfection of Prakriti. They are meant for his enjoyment. Radharani is created and all the gopis have expanded from her as his Ladini Shakti simply for his pleasure. So he is attracted to them. They want him to be. Simply, fulfill your desires. Come to us. Fulfill your desires. Like that. So it is completely devoid of material lust. And this is the difference that Krishnadas Kaviraj points out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita between Krishnendriya Priti and Atmendriya Priti. Atmendriya Priti means we're simply interested in satisfying our own senses. Right? This is called kama or lust. Right? But Krishnadas Kaviraj says that prema or love, that's the difference between prema and kama. Right? Kama means lust, but prema means love. Love means Krishnendriya Priti. Right? It means the respect of Krishna, Krishna's senses. That is prema. That is love. Right? But Atmendriya in Priti, that is calm. Right? That is lust. Lust means my senses must be satisfied. Right? And Narottama Das Thakur points out, as Devamrita Swami was telling us on Friday when he was giving class, Narottama Das Thakur points out in his songs that as long as you have this Vishaya Chariya, right, this desire to enjoy your own senses in sense gratification, in sense objects, in the material world, as long as you have this, then you can never enter the divine realm of Vrindavan. You can never enter into the spiritual world, right, because you are contaminated in your consciousness. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that there is definitely no and the fact that Lord Chaitanya, who was the most elevated sannyasi, the fact that he was absorbed in these pastimes show that there is no lust in these pastimes. Because Lord Chaitanya was such a strict sannyasi, he would have nothing to do with women at all. His female disciples had to offer their obeisances to him from a distance. Right? He would not allow women to come into his company directly. He was so strict as a sannyasi. And yet he was so disinterested in material sense gratification, but he's completely interested in the lust of the gopis for Krishna. What appears to be lust, which is actually the prema, or the love of the gopis for Krishna. So this proves, once again, that the gopis' love for Krishna is pure. It is transcendental. It's nothing to do with anything material. So we'll stop here, and we'll see the question. The Acharyas point out, I think Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, that he left, but then on another, there's like two simultaneous planes of existence or platforms on which the pastimes were being performed. So on one platform, there was like a display of Vipralamba that Krishna had left and he did not return. And that took place, that pastime took place. But simultaneously, there was another dimension in which it happened and it went on with the normal Vrindavan pastimes. But that was, it is described as being prakat and aprakat. Aprakat means unmanifest pastimes, prakat means manifest. So Krishna's pastimes are simultaneously both are going on. Simultaneously, Krishna is manifesting his pastimes. Just like Krishna was in Vrindavan on this planet 5,000 years ago. So while he was there, that was called prakat, that was his manifestation. Now he's externally, or he's appeared to have left the pastimes on this planet, and he's gone to another planet somewhere in the creation, and he's performing his Vrindavan pastimes there. So that is prakat, and what's happening now is aprakat here, because we cannot see Krishna performing those pastimes, but Krishna is still in Vrindavan performing the pastimes. Right? Because we can't see here. We can't see them because we're contaminated, but they can feel it. So that means the difference between the uppercut and the prakat pastimes. So simultaneously, when Krishna left, he did return in one pastime, but in another pastime simultaneously did not return. So that the devotees can experience both ecstasy simultaneously, sambhog and vipralamba, like this. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Varanasi not in the Rasalila pastimes. And you were explaining how in Srila Dangan Mahaprabhu is in the Rasa Lila Bhav. So can you explain how that is? It's with Nitai Gaurya that Balaram's not in the Rasa Lila.
Balaram has his own Rasa Lila. It's right that and Rupa Goswami says that there are 50 qualities that up to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma and to some degree and Lord Shiva also have 5 additional qualities. And then Narayan has the 5 additional qualities, that's the 60. Then there's the 4 that only Krishna has, that Narayan never exhibits. Balaram also has those 4. Right? And one of them is the extraordinary, or the Lila Madhurya, the special pastimes. So that means he has his own rasa dance. If you go to Vrindavan, there's a place called Ramgat, which is about 20 kilometres up the Jamuna from Vrindavan. If you go on Rajmandal Parikram, you go through it, and you cross the Jamuna at that place. So at that place, he has his own rasa lila with his gopis. Varuni and Revati. Yeah, Varuni and Ray in his gopis. So he has his own rasa lila there. So then in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the nocturnal kirtan in the Srivasangam. So during that nocturnal kirtan, Mahaprabhu takes Gadadhar by the hand and they wander about while the kirtan is going on. And he even goes, Mahaprabhu goes into two moods. Sometimes he's in the mood of Radharani separated from Krishna, or Radharani takes the mood of the Ashraya, and other times he takes the mood of being Krishna to some degree. And he takes Gadadhar by the hand and he's in the mood of Radharani, and then there's that mood. So Nittai is there and he can appreciate the mood, and this is during the kirtan, slip Mahaprabhu and Nittai, they dance together during the kirtan. You know, they dance and it's like they're dancing in a mirror. They dance opposite each other, and whatever one does, the other one does like that. So Nittai is there and he's definitely a part of the kirtan like that. But I don't know if I'm answering the question.
Where's it explained about Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar? Where's that explained?
Yeah, what's it called? It's called... I've got it at home. It's called... it's written by Vishwanath. It's a book which describes the Ashtakali Alila of Mahaprabhu. Like that. It's an authorised scripture. Like that. It's written by Vishwanath. Just like... Vindamrita was written by Krishna Goswami about the Ashtakali Leela of Radha and Krishna, and Krishna Bhavanamrita was written by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is also the Ashtakali Leela of Radha and Krishna. And he's written a smaller, it's not as big as the Krishna Bhavanamrita, but he's made a smaller book about the Ashtakali Leela of Mahaprabhu. And he says, he points out in the beginning of that book, he says that before one meditates on the Ashtakali Leela of Radha and Krishna, one should first meditate on the Ashtakali Leela of Mahaprabhu. In other words, as you go through the eight daily pastimes, if you're advanced enough while you're chanting, and you go through the eight daily pastimes, then before you meditate on the particular pastime that Krishna and Radharani are performing that time of the day, first you meditate on Mahaprabhu's pastime. So as Nittai's mood while he's in the kirtan, in terms of when Mahaprabhu is in Puri in the Gambira, Nittai doesn't enter the Gambira. He doesn't actually enter the Gambira. He doesn't go, especially in the evenings when Mahaprabhu is with Swarup Damodaran, Ramananda Roy, Nittai doesn't go at that time because the mood is different. He's Balaram and Krishna or Radharani is experiencing something different. So he doesn't enter at that time like that. But in terms of the nocturnal kirtans, it would seem to me that he would keep some distance during at least part of the kirtans. If you see that Mahaprabhu is entering a particular mood, he may keep some distance. But he's definitely there, he's definitely part of the kirtan. It's mentioned that he dances with Mahaprabhu as well, so it's hard to... Mahaprabhu was Swarup Damodaran. When Mahaprabhu was at the yatra and he was absorbed in the mood of bringing Jagannath back to Vrindavan, you know, Radharani bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan, then Swarup Damodaran would chant particular shlokas during the kirtan to enthuse Chaitanya Mahaprabhu while he was dancing in that mood, and he would increase his mood. And it's described that Lord Nityananda would follow behind him at that time, trying to stop him because he would constantly fall on the ground in his ecstasy, so he'd try to protect him from harm. So he's definitely very close to him. But it would seem that he's, you know, when he sees that he's very much in his Madhurya mood, he may pull back slightly. I would expect that's what he did, probably pull back. But he's very much there, and it says that they also dance together. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's mentioned that whenever Lord Nityananda danced, he'd not appear at the house. So I don't think I answered the question, but that's probably it. Yeah, I think...
A lot of the time Lord Nityananda was in Bengal preaching when Lord Chaitanya was in Puri. Yeah. That was his deal. He was the guru, saving conditioned souls. So,
It's also mentioned that when Mahaprabhu sent him back to Bengal, he took the Dwardasha Gopals with him. The 12 associates Mahaprabhu sent with him were the 12 prominent cowherd boys in Vrindavan, Subal, Arjuna, Ujwala, like that. So it is mentioned now. I remember in that book by Chaitanya, mentioned that when he goes back to Bengal, he was two types of prema to people in Bengal. He was delivering sakya, because he was experiencing sakya with the Dwardasha Gopal, and he's also, for those who wanted madhurya in the mood of Mahaprabhu, he was giving that as well. So he's got a connection to that, but at least in terms of the pastimes in Vrindavan, he always pulls back like that. So I suppose we have to wait till we get there to try to understand something. What's that?
Detail.
Yeah, detail. These are important things to try to understand. This is like the rust, this is where we get our juice from in terms of understanding Krishna's relationships. But I think that particular point is, I don't fully understand. It's definitely.
But then Prabhupada showed Nijananda and modified in all the temples around the world for a particular purpose.
Tamal Krishnamara said that because, like, if you go to all the Gaudiya Mutts in the Mayapur area, it's Gaur Gadadhar, practically. I mean, there's a few Gaudiya times, it's very few. So that's because, like, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own deities were Gaur Gadadhar and so forth. And that's because of the esoteric understanding of Radha and Krishna being Gaur Gadadhar. So that's the mood. But Tamal Krishnamara is pointing out that, Prabhupada came to the Vidishamadi Paschachadishatari, the fallen Western souls world. And he realized that there's only one person who's going to deliver. Only one person here is going to deliver the Western countries, and that's Nityananda. He's the only person, because he's the only one who's merciful enough to take us and put us in the service of Mahaprabhu. And it's interesting, because I was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita yesterday. I was coming back on the tram and I just flicked open a page and it opened on Prabhupada was quoting Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur was chanting verses to Lord Nityananda, and he said, "It is only you who save the fallen conditioned souls." So that's why Prabhupada installed Gaur Nitai all over the world, because
that was
he said that. He just got it. He was
close. The prayers are offered to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as having arisen on the horizon of Gaudadesh like the sun and moon to dissipate the darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali. So there's definitely an emphasis on Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as the.
Yeah, well, that's also in regards to Kaviraj Goswami being Nityananda's disciple.
Yes.
So because of that relationship also.
And when you think about it, who did Prabhupada install in Vrindavan, in his temple in Vrindavan? You had Krishna and Balaram, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and then Radha Shyamasundara. So definitely there's something important about Lord Nityananda.
What's the point there? Because that's a discussion. Krishna and Balaram is the principal.
Yeah, from the centre rather than Radha Shyamasundara, because you'd expect Radha Shyamasundara would be the centre altar. But he put them there to show that, because it's not recognised that Krishna and Balaram and Gaur Nitai are the same. And in Kali Yuga, I mean, they are the incarnations for Kali Yuga, as Anirudha Prabhu said. They've manifested, they came again. Balaram, Hoilo, Nitai, he came again. So to understand that, then Prabhupada is telling the world, especially the Vrindavan devotees, that you have to recognise that Gaur Nitai are Krishna and Balaram. They did come back again, they returned in Kali Yuga. That's who they are.
So the question is, what is the relationship between Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya in the Kirtan Sutra?
And the answer is, I don't know.
No, we can at least ascertain that Lord Nityananda was there. But there were occasions where Lord Chaitanya was absorbed in the mood of the relationship that he had with the Gopis.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's not clear, at least to us at this point in time anyway, what Lord Nityananda was thinking or doing or feeling at that particular time.
Yeah.
But he certainly was there.
Yeah, he's attractive because when you go to Govardhan, at the very end of Govardhan, which is called Puncheri, like the opposite end from Radhakund, at the far end called Puncheri, as you're going down the circuit, ambulating Giriraj, it's just before you get to the end, you'll see there's a pink temple. Do you remember? There's like a pink temple, there's a pink temple. So that place is where Krishna, that's like the conjugal part of Govardhan, where the conjugal pastimes take place. So Balaram wanted to see the conjugal pastimes, and he can't because he's Balaram, and he doesn't want to interfere with Krishna's mood. So he took the form of a tiger, and he crept, you know, very closely, and then he stood there in the bushes, and he was in ecstasy. So he's attracted to the conjugal ras of Krishna, and he serves the conjugal ras in every way he can, in the sense that he manifests as Krishna's flute, he manifests as Krishna's simasan, as a crown. This is all described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he's there, and he witnesses, and he wants to see them, and he wants to experience it. But he can't be there physically, so he'll pull back whenever. So I think, you know, in terms of him being with Lord Chaitanya, I think he would be sensitive to Lord Chaitanya's moods during the kirtan. That when Lord Chaitanya wants to dance, because it's described they dance together, and it's described in the Ratha Yatra, he's right next to him the entire time. So it would be that, it would seem to me that he would be with Lord Chaitanya, but when he understands that he's taken Gadadhar's hand and so forth in the kirtans, and he's absorbed in that particular mood, I would say he would move back.
Supporting the player may not be sent to stage behind the scenes or helping to he can be present, but as a supporting character, not as a main player. People want him as a main player when it comes to the preaching and other to the kirtan. So it's not incompatible for him to be there. It's just that you don't play with your girlfriends in front of your older brother. So Chandra can't be there to it just messes up the whole rust.
Nocturnal kirtan. He can still be there, but just, like you say, reserved in the back, you know, supporting. He's still chanting and dancing.
He's
playing mentions that he plays mridanga.
He
is the mridanga as well. He plays. Yeah, it's also mentioned that because Mahaprabhu's mood is Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prem Pradayate. So he's coming to give Vrindavan Ras specifically. I mean, that's what Krishna's Kaviraj points out. So it seems that even when you look at the Panchatattva, to some degree, because Srivas is Narada, and Narada can't fully enter the Vrindavan Ras, but it seems that when Mahaprabhu performs the Sankirtan Leela and Krishna comes as Mahaprabhu, even like Srivas and you could say a waiter is like Shiva, you know, at least half Shiva. So this is one time get past some Madhurya Prem. Right? So everyone is by Mahaprabhu's mercy, and everyone wants to taste it by Mahaprabhu's mercy. And in this particular incarnation they can taste something which they normally can't taste. And Nityananda, he can't, you know, as Anirudha Prabhu said, he can't directly be in the pastime, but he is tasting, because he does desire to taste the Madhurya Prem. It seems like, you know, he steps back at a distance. So.
You mentioned that there are three portions of
Goloka.
Actually, there's four, because there's also Navadri.
Yeah, I held that one back. I was giving a simple.
I knew you were hiding it, so I thought you would reveal it.
I was giving a simple explanation.
Yeah.
You have the typical.
There are also the other dance with Lord Chaitanya performed in the past months as well. So it's a pretty busy sort of place.
Yeah, it's called polydimensional. Polydimensional means that simultaneously, because the outer portion is Dwarka, and then there's Mathura, and the centre portion is Vrindavan. But that centre portion is also Swetadweep, which is Navadweep. And they're both existing simultaneously, but they're not aware of each other's existence. Like Vrindavan doesn't realise that Navadweep's there, and Navadweep doesn't realise that Vrindavan's there. And then sometimes, when Lord Chaitanya is performing kirtan, then suddenly he'll like open Vrindavan up to all the devotees, and then suddenly everyone will see Vrindavan. And then he'll close it again. Yeah.
And that's Balaram and the Gopis.
So that's Lord Chaitanya?
Yes.
That's Lord Chaitanya revealing Balaram and the Gopis. Yeah. That's not Lord Chaitanya revealing Balaram and the Gopis. It's Lord Chaitanya revealing Balaram and the Gopis.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is there's just so much information.
Yeah.
So much relationship. Very hard for people to understand these things. These are esoteric to the deepest.
This is God relations, like zenith, to the highest level of God realization. Where Mahaprabhu got rasa, this is where God himself gets rasa in all these intricacies. Like, you know, when Mahaprabhu is in Gambhira and you know, Sri Dhammadhara Ramananda Roy is reciting the Gobi Gita, then all this extra conversation is taking place as well. Like he feels all Krishna's behind the bush and he's saying this and this is going back, and they're actually experiencing the whole rasa. This is where the ecstasy comes. And if we want to leave the material world, then we have to become interested in this rasa. Because that's how you get out of the material world. You have to be interested in the rasa. So.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? I don't necessarily fully understand it, but I went to see Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Oxford in 2001, and the first day I got there, we had Mangalati, and then after Mangalati, he said, have you finished your rounds? And I said, no, and he said, then go and get your beads. So then I came, and it was just him and I chanting together, like in his little bhajan kutia. And then I started chanting. I just started chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And after about a second mantra, he said, you're being obtrusive. And I just looked at him like, what have I done? You know. And he said, chant softly, like that. He's only chanting like that. So he said, chant softly or silent. And if you can do that, then you can stay. And then he said, Haridas Thakur would chant 64 rounds loudly, 64 rounds softly, and 64 rounds silently. And he said, you have to be very advanced to chant silently or in the mind. That's advanced, because it means to actually, because the chanting should be audible. It should be like Hare Krishna. It shouldn't be loud so it disturbs everyone in the temple, but it should be audible. You should be able to hear a devotee chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, and it should be clear and distinct. But there is a type of chanting which is even very elevated when you can chant silently, but the mind must be absorbed in the mantra. So that shouldn't be done by neophyte devotees, because they won't be able to maintain their mental focus on the mantra. So he said to me, either do that or chant. So that's where I learned to chant silently. For those couple of days, I had to chant silently.
Now,
I managed to
check about that is japa. Haribhaja Maharaj explains three parts. Loud and soft whisper, and in the mind. And they're all japa. It means it's japa.
Three times. All considered to be japa. Yeah. In Harinam Chintamani, when Harinam Thakur was discussing with Lord Chaitanya says, how will the non-moving living entities be delivered in Kali Yuga? Like, how will trees be delivered and so on and so forth? And Harinam Thakur says, by the loud chanting. So that's the purpose of the loud chanting, like kirtan and maybe loud japa. Is it other things? Normal japa is the, like that. And maybe, I mean, normally do it so much it seems in this kind, but maybe when you become more advanced and you know you're very meditative, maybe when you're meditating Ashtakali Lila or something, then you may go into like that, possibly. Yeah, my spiritual master used to call devotees over if they're chanting too loud. That's the pastime I was
committed.
Yeah, I don't think you chant too loud. So.
But he chanted a japa on here as well on more than one occasion visit. There was no morning.
Hmm.
I know Sachinanda also prefers that the ladies to chant softly.
Yeah, it should be that, you know, we should not disturb other devotees by our chanting. Shouldn't we say that?
Some devotees just need to chant loudly because that's the only way they can get the answer. You know, so it's the absorption is dependent upon how, you know, advanced you are really, how much you can keep focused. So if you need to chant loudly to keep focused, then by all means.
As long as you're not disturbing other devotees, that's the point. Because, you know, I mean, it means when we're 20 of us sitting in a temple room together, we have to all be mindful of each other.
Yeah, otherwise what happens is you feel like somebody else is charging around for you.
Yeah, I remember one time in Sydney, two or something, there was one devotee, and he was going around Tulsi, and he was doing, like, laps, like, it was just like, wow, just speeding around. And so my Krishna just got up and walked over to him. He was a bhakta, and he just said, you know, calm down. He said, you know, we're all trying to chant peacefully, and you're doing, like, this, you know, hurricane in the middle of the temple. He said, just calm down. Visualizing the Ashtakali Lila. That's what you meditate upon when you're very advanced.
Even without chanting the time, so that is for free other living entities.
Yeah.
And what are the reasons for without chanting?
For that reason. That's why we do Sankirtan. Right? We go out and chant, we do Harinam in the streets and so forth. Because that, by hearing the holy name, it creates a samskara or an impression on the consciousness of the living entity, and it elevates his consciousness up out of the material modes of nature like that. And it destroys, it says that by hearing the holy name once, it destroys more sins than one can commit in all his countless lifetimes. So that's why we go and chant, to destroy purify the living entity's life. Okay, so Robin.